drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000, also on 100.3 HD2. You can watch the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago, and on YouTube as well. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you every single Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000, talking all things in the world of golf. And it's all brought to you by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Been a while since we've seen each other in person, Mike. You've been on a traveling circus tour for us here, out and about. You were at the BMWs. You've been at a number of golf courses, but you're finally back here in the old National Bank State Street Studios. Good to have you back. Yeah. And boy, it's been quite a couple weeks of golf since we last saw each other.
It's almost like, where do we start? I mean, it has just been a great month. August was a fantastic month for us, and it's setting up what is going to be a great end of the month in September here. But how about Victor Hovland?
Oh,
the
man.
The beat keeps going on for that young man.
He has been absolutely on fire. What a year it's been for him, right? He takes home the tour championship. He outright wins at the BMW as well, wins the Memorial earlier this year. Like, this is a guy who it feels like at this point has done everything but win a major. And at the age of 26, like, the future is unbelievably bright. And we've talked about it ad nauseum, about who is the next guy to win, be a first-time major winner. And we saw a couple this year. We saw Brian Harman. We saw Wyndham Clark. And it feels like next year it is really go time for Victor Hovland. He's been dancing around. He's had end-of-round leads at majors so far this year, but he hasn't been able to put the full four rounds together yet. He's starting to get into that winning form, and I think this last week at the Tour Championship and the week before, especially at the BMWs when he makes that dramatic comeback, sets the course record on Sunday, all of that put together, that gives you the formula that kind of says, all right, next year, this guy's going to win at least one. At some point, one of the four, he's going to come out on top at one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, after watching him win what I call on both ends of the spectrum, at the BMW, he comes back. So he is a great chaser, but he also showed and illustrated how he can hold a big lead.
Not just hold. His foot on the gas.
Yes. And I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're Xander Schauffele, so you go out and shoot a nice, snappy 62, mm-hmm. you think you're going to make up some incredible ground. How about you only make up one shot? I mean, he shoots 63 on the final day, where I think human nature is for you to kind of go into that prevent defense. Mm-hmm. You know, let's not make a mistake. Let's not get too, you know, too greedy here. He just knew one speed. Go. And that's what got him there. That's how he won at BMW. So he just stuck with the game plan. And I've said it once, I'll say it again. He is so likable, so easy to root for. I'm enjoying rooting for him now because in a few weeks we're going to be rooting against him.
Yeah, get it in while you can.
But to your point, he is prime and ready to start winning the first of what I think will be at least a handful of majors for this young man.
Yep. It's been really a remarkable run for Victor. And the thing that really has been going for him really well lately has been the putter. Now he's set up some pretty easy birdie opportunities and all that stuff, but the putter, the way that he has put the golf ball over the last 2 weeks, I mean, he had the 20-plus footer to save a par. You know, even though he won, and again, they have the staggered starts, right, for the Tour Championship. But even with that, he still finished tied for the lead alongside Xander with 261 strokes for the entire tournament. That cleared the rest of the field by eight.
Yep.
And the golf that those two played, was remarkable. And quite frankly, it's even more impressive for Victor because he did have the victory at the BMW. I do think you should get some level of reward for playing as well as you do when you're going for the Ultimate Tour Championship, some sort of quote-unquote home court advantage for playing as well as you do. And he proved exactly that.
He did. And, you know, as I sit here and listen to you speak, I would love on Sunday at the Ryder Cup to see Xander and Victor
that would be fantastic.
Go at it.
Yep.
Let's settle this once and for all. Because that'll be the last time we really see these guys until, with all the schedule changes and all the rest of it, until January. And it's going to be kind of strange again, but that's how it used to be, to give these guys a bit of a break and get them all tuned up and ready to go. Because, you know, as fast as this season came to an end, it'll be real quick before we're at the Chicago Golf Show, and then the Masters is right on top of us again.
Well, keep in mind, we do have one of the most highly anticipated TV events for a sports fan as well between now and February, and that is the second season of Full Swing.
That's true,
and
too.
And the prominence that that is going to bring to the golf world over everything that happened this year. I mean, what a whirlwind of a year. And I do want to go through like a little PGA Tour year in review with you a little bit later in the show, but like everything that went down this year is going to be fantastic theater when that finally does hit Netflix.
No doubt. And I think Victor's going to play a large part of it. I mean, and his success, his journey, and just his personality. And I think he is going to be one of those players that is going to be so revered and so well-liked no matter which country you're from. And I just see him as potentially that generational talent because he was that way when he went to Oklahoma State, and he was the phenom when he was in college. And now he's just carrying it up to the next level. And, you know, to your point about his putting, when you combine that with being one of the top drivers each of those weeks at the BMW and the Tour Championship, that is a formula and a recipe for the ultimate success. Driving it well and making putts, and where he was putting himself on the greens at both events, I paid close attention to how many real difficult putts he had versus just anything that's standard for these guys. And he didn't put himself in a lot of bad positions over, you know, the 144 holes in the past 2 weeks.
You know, you brought up his likability, and he's been a guy that I've, ever since he was at Oklahoma State, I've really tried to follow and watch his career and watch him grow his way onto the tour. But this was him after winning the tour championship, after pocketing all that cash. This was Victor Hovland reflecting on his win.
Obviously, it's a lot of cash you're playing for. I mean, it's in your back of the back of your mind. But I live in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Money goes a long ways there. It's not like I'm spending money out the wazoo every week. I don't need a lot to be happy. I don't need a lot to live within my means. So obviously, it's nice for, you know, for my family to have that protection, and my, you know, eventual kids that I'll have in the future. It's nice to have that, but it's not something that drives me. It's not something that gives me, you know, meaning. I find meaning in other places, but obviously with how society works, money is something you need.
$18 million he pocketed, and that's his answer right there.
Yep.
Life-changing stuff. I mean, he had other tournament wins where he has gotten life-changing money in that moment for his 4 days of work, but to put together a full calendar and it culminates in $18 million, and that's the humility that he shows after. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, and that's the genuineness, and that's the real kid from Oslo, Norway. He didn't grow up with a whole lot, and he doesn't need a whole lot. And as long as he maintains that sort of temperament and stays that well grounded, the sky's the limit for this kid. It just really is. You know, he played in 23 events this year and made the cut every single time.
Yes.
Didn't miss one. The kid takes 6,065 shots over a course of 88 rounds, and his average score, 68.9. That is absolutely astoundingly incredible.
He's been a lot of fun to watch this year. His approach game has been, I mean, the way that his approach game was shaped into the last, 2 months of the season maybe, was incredible. I mean, you, especially at the BMW, how many times was he tapping in for birdie? Like, it was a sweat-free birdie for him on many of those threes that he logged at on that record-breaking 62. And just the way that he attacked that course like no other, it was unbelievable to watch every single week with him. Because you're right, like, making 25 cuts, that means you're getting 25 paydays. Like, a lot of these guys, you miss a cut, you don't see a dime. And for him to go out and grind out 25 made cuts this year, it's phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. And the other thing I watched throughout the latter part of the summer is his interactions with what will be his teammates next year. I mean, Victor is going to be a major component in terms of not only the playability and the skill sets out on the golf course, but the chemistry that goes in along with their team. And I'm sure we're going to get to Ryder Cup stuff later. Mm-hmm. But this guy is taking the golf world by storm. And it's really cool to see because, again, and I've said it before, if you have a young man or even a young woman that's learning to play the game and has a desire, pay strict attention to Victor Hovland, how he acts, how he is on the course, his demeanor, his facial expressions. You never really see the guy angry. And I think we all could take a little bit from his page of how he approaches the game. It seems like he really plays golf with a real peace in his heart. And I think when you do that, the game just comes to you and you're not forcing anything. And he makes it look so easy. And he does that because there is just a genuine joy in what he's doing.
Right. He's just got the smile and the charisma and all that stuff. You know, it's been a great year in the world of golf for the up-and-coming star. When you look at Victor Hovland on the men's side, Rose Zhang on the women's side, it's been a fantastic year for, all right, these are the next stars. These are the next people you're going to be watching for 15, 20 years because the level of play that they're at and the way that they carry themselves and the youth on top of all of that too to give them the longevity moving forward.
And from what I know of Rose Zhang and what I do know of Victor, I think our golf game right now is in great hands for the future. When you look at those two individuals right there, two great role models, but two just absolutely flat out amazing professionals now who had stellar, and I mean stellar, amateur careers. So not everybody who's a great amateur can easily transfer over to the professional game and ultimately make a career of it or make a great career of it. But there's really few that can turn around and just do it right out of college, right away.
In your first event.
In your first event. And that's what Rose did.
Yep.
I mean, it goes back to just, I played at Naperville Country Club with Brian Brown, the pro, yesterday, and we were remarking at how much the game has changed and what these kids can do and how they swing the golf club is so different than it was 10 years ago. And it's almost deflating to our generation to say, there's no way we can get that good. Because the equipment, their fitness, their age and youth is just amazing. But it is so cool to watch because they are bringing the skill set and the results in the game to a level that's never been seen before. I've never seen 61s and 62s and being shot like as frequent at perhaps the hardest, most stressful events of the year. I expect that at the Sammy Davis Jr. event or, you know, where they're making a gazillion birdies at some of these, you know, pitch and putt courses. Eastlake, Olympia Fields are not pitch and putts. They are big boy golf courses, but they just absolutely manhandled them both weeks.
Yeah, it's been a real treat to watch this year. All right, when we come back, I do want to recap the year for the PGA Tour, and we will also get to the Ryder Cup picks. It's all in the books now, so we will dissect what Captain Zach Johnson had to say and his final cutdown list when we come back. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you. This segment brought to you by Geneva National. Experience 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you here on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge. Talking all things in the world of golf with you. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. What did you make of the PGA Tour season? This was definitely an interesting year. We had two first-time major winners. We had a live guy win a major. We had, a merger between the bitter enemy of live golf and the PGA Tour. At least we think we have that merger for now. But when you look across the year, Mark Schlabach from ESPN.com had a year in review talking about everything that went down on the PGA Tour. He has the breakout player, best player, rookie of the year, comeback player of the year, best victory, biggest surprises, all that stuff. So we can just kind of go through this and discuss. His player of the year is Jon Rahm. And I think it's kind of tough to dispute that because of the way that Rahm played out of the gate. Like, he was fantastic. He won the Masters on that Easter Sunday. Right out of the chute, he was dominant. I mean, we were talking top 10 after top 10, really top 3 after top 3 after top 3. It felt like he was just a golf playing machine. And just the way that he entered the year, it's tough to dispute that. However, he wasn't great down the stretch. When you got into the Tour Championship and some of these other majors, you thought he'd play a little bit better in, and he just wasn't quite there at the end of them.
No, and but you got to agree, though, it's hard to remember at this point of the year just how great Jon Rahm was in the first 3, 4, 5 months of this season. I'm not sure anyone has ever had a better stretch of great golf as he did, aside from maybe Tiger Woods. But with that being said, to me, Victor Hovland, you know, is just finishing under the wire of Rahm. I have to believe that Rahm, you know,
the major pushes Rahm over the edge.
Yes, I mean, and that's
and it's the Masters too.
And had, I think, you know, Victor pulled out maybe the Open Championship and then finished the way that he did, then I think he gets the nod. But in this case, I think well deserved for Jon Rahm. And it's funny, he's player of the year, but he's not number one in the world rankings.
Yeah. And boy, is he letting you know about it too, with the complaints he kind of made down the stretch about the formatting of the Tour Championship. Yeah,
there's no kinda in that.
Yeah.
He was complaining.
The breakout player of the year, Wyndham Clark, who he picked up his first PGA Tour victory, also captured a major as well at the U.S. Open at L.A. Country Club this year. And just you look at the way that Wyndham Clark kind of took the golf world by storm. And he's going to be a part of the Ryder Cup as well. Like, you look at everything that Wyndham Clark did this year, you've always sort of heard his name talked about in golf circles, but this was the year he really emerged onto the scene and really made a name for himself.
No doubt. I mean, here's a guy that in May of 2022 was ranked 313th in the world. Mm-hmm. You know what he's ranked today? 10th. So, breakout, that's a big, big breakout. So, well done by Wyndham Clark. Fantastic player. We always knew it. But he has really kind of found his stride and well-deserved. And I think he's going to do some great things for us over in Rome. At least I hope he will. But winning that Open, he was in such command out in Los Angeles and, really made a name for himself. And it'll be interesting to see if a guy like this, after going from being so far down and moving so far up, how his world is changing between sponsorships and appearances and all the rest of it. How is 2024 going to work out for you?
Right.
So he's a guy that I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on next year.
He finishes third in the FedEx Cup standings as well. I think
Yes. Kind
of a no-brainer here for Absolutely. Breakout player of the year. Then you go down to the comeback player of the year. This is runaway, maybe the biggest margin of victory of any of these awards that were handed out here, but it's Ricky Fowler.
Yes.
The guy was dead to rights from a golf standpoint a year ago and nearly pulls off the U.S. Open victory. He is hovering in a lot of other majors as well. It felt like the year of Ricky. And the other thing about it, too, is like we've seen top tens from Ricky, but they're the, oh, I'm out of contention. Why don't I just catch a Sunday heater and sneak my way into a backdoor top 10? No, these were near wire-to-wire top 10s and, like, legitimate top 10s from Ricky Fowler at the majors this year, including, especially at the U.S. Open.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a four-year drought that he doesn't win over 96 starts. But when he put it together, he reminded us just how great Ricky Fowler can be. You know, he hit that approach shot to 3 feet on that 72nd hole to force a playoff at that Rocket Mortgage event in Detroit when he beat Colin Morikawa and Adam Hadwin. So the guy is a clutch putter, as he showed when he made the 11-footer on that extra hole to win. But after being 133rd in shots gained last season, he moves up to 10th this season. And a lot of it was done because of the flat stick. And that's why Ricky Fowler is going to be a great player to have on our team, just because he can be and is a clutch putter.
Mm-hmm. A year ago, he didn't make the U.S. Open, didn't qualify for the U.S. Open, and he was outside the top 150. And now all of a sudden, you look at what he did in a world standpoint this year, and he finishes the year tied for 16th. Like, that is a massive turnaround for one of the faces, really, of the sport. And one of the icons of the sport there. The best victory, I think this is also a pretty easy one here, but it's Brian Harman and the dominance that he had at the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. I mean, he was dominant, led from the second round on, and quite frankly, it was never even close. You didn't even really have to tune in on Sunday to know that Brian Harman was going to win that thing.
Yeah, and I guess when you say best victory, I guess it's best on certain levels, but I don't know. As far as the best event, I kind of think the best victory, Brooks Koepka at PGA was hard to beat, for me at least. Mm-hmm, and I just know how difficult Oak Hill can play. Mm-hmm. And given the situation with the whole LIV PGA at that point, you know, we didn't have the deal yet, hadn't been put in place. So he was out there with a lot of animosity and a lot of people rooting against all LIV players, for that matter. But the display of golf that he put on, not only at Augusta, but how he learned and applied it at the very next major, I just thought was so great and so cool.
I would say that is the most notable victory of the year. Oh, maybe not the best victory, but the most notable. Because, yes, exactly, the friction that was happening with LIV and with the PGA Tour, all of that kind of coupled together there, and you had yourself quite the stir after that. A lot of people were talking about golf after that because, oh, here comes Big Bad Liv in, and we're taking over these majors now. And, I mean, even Phil at the Masters, right? The quietest runner-up finish of all time. I mean, you would never have known that Phil was right in the thick of things by the CBS coverage there down the stretch. But he was right there. And even though he probably really wasn't going to win, but he was knocking on the door that entire Sunday. And those were probably two of the more notable performances of the entire year.
No doubt. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up about Phil. You know, I'd love to give, you know, the CBS, you know, executive producers and people calling the shots there. Had the deal been in place before Oak Hill, would have Phil and the LIV players been viewed a lot differently on television? That would be, I think they would have, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. This is one that kind of got buried because I think this happened right on the heels of the deal announcement. So we really didn't talk about this, but the best finish, Nick Taylor and his 72-foot eagle putt to beat Tommy Fleetwood in a playoff at the Canadian Open. Nick Taylor, a Canadian himself, and he drains a 72-footer to capture his country's title. Like, that right there was an amazing moment. The party on the green. Adam Hadwin, a fellow Canadian, gets pile-driven by a security guard when he's going crazy celebrating a win for his countrymen there. Like, that was a great moment of the year. And it really didn't get captured all that much because of all the other things that were taking place between Liv and the PGA Tour.
Yeah, because that happened, what, on, you know, June
11th.
11th, mm-hmm. You know, and the announcement was obviously June 6th. So, but yeah, I couldn't think of a more enjoyable, cool thing to have watched. And, you know, when that putt went down, I still remember the facial expression of Tommy Fleetwood. And Fleetwood had just this funny grin on his face because he knew, how do you beat that?
Yeah.
You just can't. You got to be happy for somebody who just hold it out from another, you know, area code across the green. And, you know, that kind of stuff happens. And that's, all in all, that's what kind of makes golf special in certain regards. You just never know, as when that ball is still in play, anything can happen.
No doubt. Last one here I want to get to, and it was one of the greatest, not just golf stories, but sports stories of the year. The best hole-in-one, and it is Michael Block at the PGA Championship. Remember, he's one of the club pros that qualified here. He's played in a couple events before, but he was right in the thick of things. I mean, he was in the top 10 all pretty much all tournament long. I believe he ends up finishing 15th, but he dunks an ace on the 15th hole, and Jim Nance caught a little bit of flack for spoiling it too, but that was one of the moments of the year in golf. This guy, Michael Block, just out of your local club, right? And he goes in and puts on a show at the PGA Championship.
And, I mean, a guy that we all got to know and love in a matter of 48 hours, and he became a household name, like you said. But that shot at 15 with that 7-iron, which also looked like a plumber's tool when he took a look at this thing. The thing was like 12 years old. So he's not playing like with the new
shows
shiny.
The difference between our bags and their bags.
So, yeah, I mean, he had a worn out spot the size of a quarter on it, the whole thing. So, you know, that to me could have also been considered the shot of the year. But then I also look at his shot at 18 when he pulls it way left. And having been there, that shot was nearly impossible. And he got it up and down to finish 15th, mm-hmm. top 15. Go to the PGA Championship. So we'll see Michael Block again next year. But yeah, when that thing went in, you couldn't have scripted. If we went to Hollywood and said, here, I've got a story. It's a little-known club pro from way out west. It's going to travel across the country, and this is what is about to unfold. They would have thrown you out the door in Hollywood and said, mm-hmm. that's just too fantasy-like.
And now it's got 30 for 30 potential on it.
Yeah, I would expect to see it. And here again, here's another situation where Full Swing was there.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. that I just can't wait for that documentary to come out.
Yeah, going to be fantastic. All right, we will dive into the Ryder Cup, Captain Zach Johnson, and the picks he did and did not make for the U.S. team. We'll talk about all that when we come back. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776 is the phone number to call. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
For its first road victory in the Ryder Cup since 1993. They got a good chance to do it this year, given all the stipulations that are taking place. By the way, this segment brought to you by Zero Friction and their new Wheel Pro golf bag. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you here on the CDGA Golf Show with you every Saturday, talking all things in the world of golf. So, a couple of notable picks for Zach Johnson and the Ryder Cup team, and that is, first off, Brooks Koepka being named to the Ryder Cup team by Zach Johnson. He is going to be the only LIV golfer participating in the event this year. And the other one of note is Justin Thomas, who struggled this year, did not qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs, and but is a well-respected, well-renowned and successful golfer, specifically at the Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. So all of that put together here, and you've got an interesting team for the U.S. Now, just one LIV guy. There certainly could have been cases made for two others. Dustin Johnson, who had a good year on LIV, had a couple solid showings at some of the majors this year, and Bryson DeChambeau, who really down the stretch was one of the best golfers in the world, but it was on the LIV Tour where he was firing rounds in the 50s. Yeah. And you look at what he did down the stretch, and that's a guy who's been there and done that before from a Ryder Cup standpoint, but he has been left off, and it really is because of the LIV implications there. But all right, so here's your roster. The captain's picks, the guys who were hand-selected by Zach Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, and Sam Burns. And then the qualifiers, you had Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, and Xander Schauffele were the ones that qualified there based on points. So you can't do anything with the points, guys, but those guys all well-deserving after the years that they had. But the captain's picks, Koepka, Morikawa, JT, Fowler, Spieth, and Sam Burns, what did you make of all of that?
I actually like it, and I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, up in arms about JT making the team. You know, I think of all the players who didn't make it, I think Keegan Bradley's got the most or the best argument as to why he really should be on the team. But there's a reason that he's not on the team. And I think it goes, we have to take first, I think, a step back. And let me preface all this by saying the big difference, there's a huge difference between stroke play and match play. And let me also say that for us to go over to Europe, because we have shown this for 30 years, it's hard to win on foreign soil. I mean, really hard. So
it's been 30 years.
It's been 30 years. And in fact, I was there the last time they won over at the Belfry. But the biggest takeaway I had from spending a week with the team and everybody, the official party, when I walked onto the campus at the Belfry, I could not believe the intimidation factor. See, Europeans, when you get to those temporary structures, the tents, the buildings, that kind of thing, they are far more advanced than we are in America. So in 1993, when I showed up, there were buildings that were 3 and 4 stories tall. And it felt like you were entering into a coliseum. And I have to tell you, everybody that was in attendance is not your friend. It isn't like walking onto Augusta. Mm-hmm. It's not like walking at the U.S. Open or the BMW Championship. These people don't like you. And they'll let you know that they don't like you. And if you have any soft mental side of you, it's going to be revealed in a big, big way.
You know, it's funny you say that, because remember what was one of the big talks out of the BMW Championship is you got Max Homa and John Rahm and their gripes with fans and the gambling behind
things.
That's
exactly
right. And some of the thin skin that you kind of heard out of them because of the fact that they don't like that some fans are rooting for a missed putt so they can win their bet with their buddy or something like that.
Exactly. And I might even advise earplugs for some of these guys who have elephant ears, so to speak, where they hear everything. Because if you can hear everything, what you're about to hear might actually be a little bit blue in nature, as they say. Mm-hmm. But they are not afraid to tell you what they think of you. They are not afraid to cheer when a shot, it goes wayward for you. So there is an intimidation factor that unless you've been there, you can't appreciate it. So I looked at what Zach Johnson's doing as actually pretty ingenious. You know, in 1980, long before you were born, Tyler, the American hockey team won the gold medal in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And Herb Brooks did something that went against the norm. He didn't pick the 20 best hockey players. In fact, on the first day, he cut the Hobey Baker winner, which is the comparable of the Heisman Trophy winner, and made these guys take a psychology test. He looked for 20 guys that could work as a team and be a team and not be a bunch of individuals. If we go over there with a lot of talented individuals, we will get destroyed. We've got 30 years to prove that. What he's doing is ingenious. Herb Brooks took a page out of the Russians' book that was predicated on speed of skating and fitness and endurance and conditioning and took it to a level and beat him at their own game. Zach Johnson's doing the same thing. For the past 30 years, the Europeans have been able to keep a nucleus of players. We here in America are calling it boys club, which I hate that term, but they are keeping guys together that do well together. There is a chemistry. And when you've got to walk into that environment, you would rather walk in with guys that have been there, that know it and can understand it and can persevere through it. And honestly, we do not have a guy that's a mouthpiece. Who's the loud cheerleader? Who's going to be the thorn in their side? It's not going to be Scottie Scheffler.
No.
It's not going to be some of the guys that made it automatically. So as a reason we gave the captain six picks, he's taken a flyer on Justin Thomas, and I think it's a well-calculated one at that. You know, the guy's got a record and of playing not only great in the Ryder Cup, but in the President's Cup. And in my opinion, we absolutely destroyed them at Whistling Straits. 19-9, biggest deficit in the history of the Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. So until that team loses, let's send them over. And that's what he's doing. He's keeping as much of that nucleus as he can, sans DJ and Bryson, which I think if I were to change things in a more radical way, I might consider leaving Sam Burns off and Ricky off, because Ricky's record is only, you know, 3-7-3 or something. His Ryder Cup record is not very, very good. But if you put those three together, those three LIV players, and let me remind you, at Whistling Straits, those three guys accounted, just those three, for over half the Americans' points. So there is that chemistry. But I think Sam Burns got the nod because of the relationship with Scottie Scheffler. And I think putting the pairings together and keeping chemistry at the forefront is a good move by Zach Johnson. Now, does Justin Thomas deserve it? No. But does his past Ryder Cup experience speak volumes? You bet it does. I would be interested to know from Zach if this Ryder Cup were played here in America, if he'd pick Justin then. See, I think he'd leave him off the team, because you don't have to do anything except just put your hand by your ear to the crowd, and that crowd will let you have it as far as being an American. So to fire up our crowd, fire up our players is easy when it's on our side of the pond, but it's when we go over there. And I think Zach is being criticized now, but I think in October we'll be looking at him like the guy knew what he was doing.
I've got a couple other thoughts on that. We'll get to all of that when we come back here, because this is one of the more fascinating rosters, because there is debate.
Oh yeah,
surrounding it.
Well,
plenty
there always
of debate. Right. 312-332-3776. What did you make of Zach Johnson's captain's picks for the upcoming Ryder Cup? We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Zero Friction, the most innovative products company in golf.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. Talking a little bit of Ryder Cup with you. If you want to jump on in, 312-332-3776. Talk all things of what you made of Zach Johnson's captain's picks. It was Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Sam Burns, and from the LIV Tour, Brooks Koepka. You know, it's going to be one of those interesting Ryder Cups, because you've got a couple of staples on the European side that are not going to be a part of it. No Sergio Garcia, no Lee Westwood, no Ian Poulter, after they resigned from the DP World Tour, so therefore are ineligible to compete in the Ryder Cup on the European side. And
no Sergio.
And no Sergio as well. And you just look at, I think Zach Johnson went for the safe pick because he knows this is a real chance for the U.S. team to win. And Justin Thomas, I think, is the safe pick over a guy like a Lucas Glover, or you get a young guy in there, Denny McCarthy. Like, this is the safe pick. This is elevating your floor. So you know that between the ears, you're not going to get some guy who has little experience or no experience that goes in there and is a little rattled, whose game is good, but not at the elite level of like a Scottie Scheffler, where you know you're not going to have to worry about the level of play. This is something where JT is the smart pick here, and I'm with you. I think the only guy I actually maybe have a little gripe with is a Sam Burns. I probably would have opted for a DJ.
Yeah, I would agree. But I think this is where the influence of Scottie Scheffler speaking with Johnson and says, pick my guy, because I feel the chemistry between the two of us in terms of four ball or alternate shot is going to be best when, you know, we are together. We know each other's game. We know, you know, the things we do well, the things we don't do well. So, yeah, I think that would have been one that I probably would have looked at changing. That would have probably been my first change. And then putting a guy like DJ, you got to remember, DJ was 5-0 at Whistling Straits. We quickly forget how in love and how revered and how regarded. I mean, any city in America would have thrown a huge parade for that man on Sunday of the Ryder Cup up at Whistling Straits. He was 5-0. That's unheard of. And no matter who he played with, he won. And when he's on his own, he won. That's a guy that I think the team will miss, and I think he's a loved guy by the players. But he was left off the team, and there was probably some good reasoning by Zach to do so. But a guy like Brooks, you got to leave a guy like Brooks Koepka on, because the guy is just about winning. He is wired to win. He's a big game hunter. He plays well when the chips are at the highest mark.
He plays to the competition.
He does.
Of what the level of event is.
And I think just having Brooks there makes everybody better, because they look at him and they're like, this guy is here to kick some major tail and take names. And he doesn't care who he's paired with. That's the other beauty of this. Mm-hmm. He'll tell Zach, I don't care who you put me with. We're going to win. And that's his attitude. So I want that type of mentality with me over in Europe. That's what I think is going to help this team. There's a lot of different things that go on away from, because they spend a lot of time together. They put these things together like pods. So these four guys will hang out, these four and these four, because they all have like menus. They love the same food, same music, same this. And they're just sort of into this, you know, that's their group. And I think Zach will do that as well with these guys. And so I think chemistry is going to be the biggest intangible that we get to now inflate, use to our advantage. And to the names you just mentioned that will not be there, the usual cast of villains and characters won't be there. And that is going to be a major void for them. But I think it's a good idea for, in the big, big picture of Ryder Cup for the Americans, to leave a guy like, for example, Cam Young off the list, because he will make the Ryder Cup next time, but it will be on American soil. Yeah. And I think when you cut your teeth at Ryder Cup, you want to cut it in the United States first before over there, because I think the effects can be pretty damaging otherwise. But honestly, I think for a guy like Cam Young and some of the others that didn't get picked, who will probably be Ryder Cuppers in years to come, they don't feel it now, but it could be the best blessing in disguise.
How does it stack up with the European side? We'll dive into that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive. If you want to jump on in, 312-332-3776. The CDGA Golf Show will be back in 2 minutes.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.